Welcome to Hacking Postgres, a podcast about extensions, extension creators, and other interesting, innovative things in the world of Postgres. I'm Rye Walker, founder of Tembo, a managed Postgres company, and today I'm with Andy Atkinson. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rye. Happy to be here. Excited to be here.
Great. Well, I usually like to start with just getting a quick background and go back into like where'd you grow up and what were you doing before Postgres?
Yeah, I grew up in a small town in Minnesota, actually. I'm from Minnesota originally and ended up going to university here and started my career here, moved around a bit. Most of my career has been as a web applications developer. And I would say I started, probably what was most popular in the mid-2000s, which would be like MySQL, at least for like kind of open source web development kinds of projects. And I started in Postgres. Actually, I remember specifically because it was related to Heroku. Back in 2009, I was at the RubyConf in San Francisco, and Heroku was had a presence there. And I think I was remembering that was the first time I tried it out. And the developer experience was amazing, and it was so easy to get a Ruby on Rails app deployed. And then they were big advocates for Postgres, and I was kind of like, what is this thing? And dove into it starting from there, and then have kind of stuck with it since then.
Yeah, that's great. I was similarly, like it's possible I used Postgres before Rails and Heroku kind of made it the standard, but I think Rails was actually seemed like it was a little bit flexible about what database you use, but then once Heroku became the platform and that was the main option, it just was default, you know, in my mind from that day forward. So we're both old school Rails users. I think I started using Rails, it was like 08 or 0.8 or something, and it sounds like maybe you were right around the same time, if not earlier.
Yeah, I remember it was like one of the versions, I was past 1.0, but it was an early version of like 1.1 or 1.2 or something, kind of 2007-ish. I had started my career just before that with like in the world of Java enterprise development, was learning Java and, you know, had done some of that in college. And so I was primed to really, be excited about all the things that Ruby on Rails offered for developer productivity and excitement and that kind of thing. And was more a basic user of the database at that point in time, though, you know, like more through the ORM and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So recently I made a statement that I didn't think colleges should teach Java to freshmen. I don't know if you saw any of that drama, and like the Java brigade is big.
It is a little, I will say that interestingly, you know, I could have started and still be writing Java and be a successful developer in my career. That's, you know, about 15 years long. And and I do think that's fair. I mean, but I do think that there's been, for me, a lot of richness and interest in working with different programming languages and even within Java now too. Like, you know, I was actually somewhat recently involved in it at a company that used it as a primary language for applications. And even then there was a movement more towards like Kotlin and some other alternatives on the JVM and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, like I'm not super aware of how good, quote, modern Java is. I believe people when they tell me it's great, but still doesn't mean that I want developers. So it's funny because I just think it's like really early startup mentality. Like my experience is like if you're starting a fresh company with a few million dollars and an idea, it's best to attract risk takers, and generally the risk takers aren't the Java devs in the world. So I don't deny that there aren't lots of Java jobs, but I think like, hey, for me, can I have some devs at a college too, or do they all have to go to the people who like Java?
Yeah, that makes sense. Kind of the risk profile and especially who would choose it, you know, today. You know, there's exciting new things, but yeah, it's not, certainly not the, you know, catching more of the mind share around like exciting and being a new language and that kind of thing.
Well, it's funny too, because it's like the exact, I also like Postgres a lot, and it seems like it's about the same age, you know, and like, they're both kind of long running products that someone could probably argue Postgres is to Java is what, like, you know, some new SQL thing is to their, you know, the databases. So, I don't know. I just think that there's, I think a ton of innovation is happening. Again, this is the same argument that the Java people have. There's a ton of innovation in Postgres over the past 5 or 10 years that make it pretty new in my mind. You know, a lot of this stuff's new to me.
Maybe we all just need to get in a room, Postgres people and Java people, and focus on our similarities more than our differences.
Yeah, perhaps. But I still say, like, yeah.
No, I know what you mean. I think interestingly too, like, there's a phenomenon of, and maybe there's a Java corollary to this, but with Postgres, even though it's also been around for a long time, there's a lot of, you know, newer or earlier career developers that haven't really used a relational database a ton. They might have used other paradigms. And, or, you know, speaking for Ruby on Rails, a lot of the most successful big companies that use it, that, you know, it's also not a new technology by any stretch, but those big successful anchor companies, they're often MySQL oriented companies. And it kind of speaks to the era of when they started most to me.
Yeah.
A lot of the newer companies starting in the last 10 years are choosing Postgres, even in the Ruby on Rails world.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think there's always opportunities to educate newer kind of eras of people, even if it's older technology.
Yeah. It's true. And since I've kind of been on the Ruby kick, you know, since 2007, and then obviously it's not that I'm a fan of JavaScript, but we're not getting rid of JavaScript anytime soon. I'm like, it'd be nice if the kids, like, had some nice server side and client side JavaScript experience. You know, that makes them kind of, it's like a prerequisite to being a unicorn in a sense, is having multiple languages. But anyway, let's skip back to this. You said the word, the Java word, and triggered me there. Tell me about your Postgres work. I know you've built some stuff. Tell me, what have you built in the past, and what are you working on now?
Yeah. My role is, I'd say, more, is going to be more on the advocacy and education side these days. I've just contributed my first really small documentation patches to Postgres, and have been learning about the mailing list process. And the last couple of years, I've been attending Postgres events and meeting some people in the community, and that really helps to tie faces to names on posts where I'll see, like, for example, Laetitia, I met her, and she wrote a great post on contributing to Postgres that I used to help, you know, format my patch correctly and kind of know what to do and that kind of thing. I've got a lot of energy and interest in helping around that area at this point. Like, stay tuned for some things about how to help with, contributing to Postgres, that, you know, with my kind of outsider fresh perspective.
Yeah.
But for the most part of my career, I've been more of a database user. And then the last couple of years, been really interested in performance, particularly for web applications, which often boils down to, you know, queries and indexes and somewhat schema design and somewhat parameters and stuff like that.
How much work is it to, I mean, I know, like, Rails has, like, strong migrations, and maybe that's the answer, but how good does Rails, would you say, defaultly handle those performance opportunities?
I would say that there's not much in the way of database performance tooling that's available in Rails out of the box.
Yeah.
I'd say that a lot of it is, there's some ingredients that are kind of raw ingredients. The basics might be, active record generating SQL queries that are, there isn't a lot of maybe attention to what that, you know, what the supporting indexes are for that query and what the kind of behavior is going to be at a high level of concurrency of that query. Like, none of that's really part of the framework. You mentioned strong migrations, which is a popular Ruby gem that captures a bunch of good patterns around making migrations safe in a concurrent context.
Yeah.
And there's some other great ones too, actually, in Ruby and other languages. None of that's actually baked into Ruby on Rails either, which I was thinking about recently, how that actually could be a nice capability to have in Rails. Like, you know, hey, you're making this change, and it doesn't prevent you from adding an index without using concurrently, for example, on a table that's maybe active, that kind of thing. Like, it might be nice to build some of that straight in. But the community has really sprung up with, you know, share for people that don't do Ruby, the shared libraries ecosystem is Ruby Gems, and the community has sprung up for some of those kinds of needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Rails, to me, I would say it's notorious for, because you can build things so quickly, you don't have to think very much. And like, you can easily do like an N+1, for example, query when you could have, you know, got a collection in one result. Instead, someone just wires up an active model, you know, relation, and they're just like hitting a bunch of rows because, you know, like for related data, for example, and Rails doesn't warn you about that at all. You know, you right. gotta figure that out later.
Yeah, that's true. And it that reminds me though, there is one newer capability called strict loading, which I've talked a bit about before, but it's in Rails, I think in 6.1, and the current version is 7.1. So it's a pretty recent version.
Yeah.
And it's not enabled by default. So it's still an opt-in mechanism that developers have to choose. But what it does is actually does force you to, it does detect those scenarios where you could load a whole collection of things at once instead, and will raise an exception in the application.
Yeah.
So that's a good pattern, I think, that for new code ought to be probably enabled by default.
Yeah. You should just do a PR, flip the bit and say, fight me.
It could be a possibility. I guess it's always the backwards compatibility challenge and, you know, for existing code and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, for a new application, again, maybe not in dev or whatever, but yeah.
That's a good one. That one helps a little bit with query patterns, but again, with like indexes and, you know, and that's tricky too, because you've got this huge gap between how you develop locally and the data you work on and the power of your local computer versus what's running in production and the data that's there and the concurrency. So it's maybe a little, doesn't really feel, I haven't seen a good example actually in any language or framework about how to, you know, out of the box, so to speak, with the framework to kind of short or narrow that gap between local development and production execution environment. But, you know, I think the best thing developers can do is try to learn about how their code really runs in production and use their observability tools and learn how Postgres parses, you know, how it handles queries, how query execution plans work and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And you've written a book around some of this stuff, right?
Yeah. And thank you. Yeah. And part of the, so a good segue, and also, you know, that kind of lack of, you know, arguably lack of support in Ruby on Rails for, you know, how is this query executing in production and all of those things. Like the reality is they have created an opportunity for, you know, if you work on a team and you want to, you know, kind of be a database person and help your team out and show them, hey, you know, here's how to write a more efficient SQL query, or, you know, maybe of course, like at pull request time or something, but here's an index that will help the execution of this query, help lower its cost. And those kinds of skills, you know, a lot of teams do have with their senior and engineers and that sort of thing, but a lot of teams don't. And, you know, relational databases aren't the latest, you know, hot trending topic. So a lot of folks aren't necessarily building those skills. So I did kind of see an opportunity, and I've written a book. It's called High Performance Postgres for Rails. And it's currently available in beta. It's going to be wrapped up here pretty soon. We're still fixing some issues, and it kind of is like a look back at a lot of things in my career where, it would have been nice to know about, you know, a lot of cool things. And it's actually mostly a Postgres book. It's about, I've been telling people, like 75% Postgres. And
how many times harder is it than you thought it was going to be to make the book?
Oh yeah, that's a good question. It's so time intensive, and it's you know, there's some similarities to writing code too, where you might polish and polish, and then you got to just ship eventually, you know, and deal with the repercussions. But it's hard knowing that the book is going to go into a printed form to not just want to kind of keep polishing.
Yeah.
And so it is very time intensive and pretty difficult to get that right. But I do have a lot of the source code kind of externalized and available on GitHub as well. It's public. So even if you don't buy the book, you can check it out. And more, anything where the reader does a lot of setup and stuff, I try to just put in as a shell script so that I can kind of rerun it and maintain it that way and that kind of thing.
Nice. Yeah. My friend, Josh Owens, was writing a book on Meteor early on in the in the birth of that framework. And, you know, by the time he got to the last chapter, he had to rewrite the first chapter and then the second chapter and then the third and then all the way to the end. And then like the next version of Meteor would come out by the time he got that iteration done. And just like, it was forever. It was a forever project for one person to do, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know if it ever even got shipped, to be honest, but it was quite a spectacle. But yeah, I imagine things aren't moving quite so fast in Rails land. I mean, I've used Rails 7 and I think it's just like, obviously there's a lot of new things there. There is a lot of innovation in even in Rails 7. That's fairly unique in the web development world, but,
Yeah, fortunately I was able to, focus on some of the innovation actually happened to be some of the Postgres things that just were now supported in Active Record that have been around for a while. So like, composite primary keys are supported if you have a big organization and you want to have, you know, your primary keys defined with multiple columns, common table expressions that, you know, if you write SQL and Postgres, you've been possibly writing for a decade, but they're supported now with Active Record methods. So you can kind of work with the same object types. So those are a couple of things, but actually in the time of writing the book, yeah, Rails 7.1 did come out and Postgres 16. So I needed to go through from the beginning and I wanted to and retest everything. And one thing I'll say is Docker makes it a little bit easier. In the latter section of the book, readers set up replication with two instances. And I did all of that with Docker because it's so much easier to just run a Docker run command. And then you have to do a little bit of finagling with editing files off of the container and pushing them back and stuff like that. But it makes the, you know, changing, going from Postgres 15 to 16 was just changing one line. So at least that part was easier.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, like the best agile web development with Ruby on Rails, AW, whatever, I'm so impressed by that squad to have gotten that quality of a book out that early in a project, you know, that it was just like, you know, I probably read that three times as I was learning Rails. I'm sure you did too.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. That was how I first, that was definitely in my first couple of books. Yep.
Cool. So what, you know, do you have any big milestones? Obviously launching the book, that'd be nice. Anything else, that you're looking forward to? Any other milestones?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've been really enjoying hearing from people that have picked it up and said, hey, I learned a few things, you know, that's kind of what my more of the purpose is, versus, you know, there's of course a financial piece, but as far as like a purpose to my, you know, career and work and stuff, that feels good. So I think kind of engaging more with more developer communities is something I'm going to be trying to do. And, you know, I've talked with the publisher and we kind of went back and forth on this, but we could actually expand the book out in the future to be more general to web applications. I do think readers, like prospective readers that use other languages and frameworks that are similar to Ruby on Rails or similar in that they're kind of open source, MVC. So for example, like PHP and Laravel or Python and Django.
Yeah.
One of the reviewers, who's a Postgres figure, Haki Benita, he's presented at CitusCon and some other events. Haki's been involved a bit with the book as well. And he's a more of a Python and Django user.
Yeah.
And he was pointing out some similarities, even in really kind of, you know, narrow, very specific spots. He provided some Postgres feedback as well, but then also he's noticing things in Rails that are really similar to Django, for example. So that could be another milestone to kind of, you know, shop it around a little bit more.
It's like, well, you can translate to other languages. And I don't mean, you know, spoken written languages, other computer or, you know, frameworks. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah,
it shouldn't be like starting from scratch, right? It should be 80% similar, probably.
Another thing I've been thinking about is I've been telling Postgres people at Postgres events about this book as well too, and I think they might be a little bit surprised. They're like, "Well, I'm not a Ruby on Rails developer," you know.
Right.
But
right.
I think, which is understandable, but I think that I'm trying to kind of, you know, message about, there's this opportunity for advocacy for Postgres as well. You know, if we can kind of win some more mind share and, you know, market share, of course, like for Ruby on Rails applications or other frameworks and backend technologies, and kind of sign them up as Postgres enthusiasts and advocates through, you know, their skill development and their learning opportunities. Yeah. I think that's a win too. You know, like Postgres is so, I'd say I've been taking it more seriously as my career emphasis for like almost 3 years now, and using it for 10 years. But, you know, it's like, I still have a huge running list of things I want to learn about. And there's just so many things all the time.
Yeah. Well, and then you start to go in the vector that we at Tembo are exploring, which is like using Postgres for different use cases and trying to understand all the extensions, which is essentially a bottomless pit of learning that you can go down. With the hope that we can help at least early projects avoid sprawling as much as the world naturally wants you to sprawl, which is like a lot and often. But I'm curious if you have any thoughts on sprawl across data tools and kind of the mission we're going after.
Yeah, I've had the privilege of meeting some Tembo folks and one of the founding engineers, Adam, as you know, and have been kind of a Tembo fan following along on, you know, it's interesting that, you know, Tembo came around and I felt like overlapped a lot. We had a lot of overlapping interests where it's like, you know, Postgres is this extensible database that gives you both the super, you know, reliable core that's been around for decades, but also the ability to do innovative stuff, you know, like with vector search, for example, we've seen in the last couple of years. So brand new, you know, stuff that's new that didn't exist at all. It's like we can, you know, Postgres is extensible. We've got hooks and other mechanisms to add capabilities to it to kind of keep you within the operating context that you're familiar with, hopefully, you know, if you're a running Postgres shop. My inspiration into that was from some of my career experience where we were running Postgres, but we're also running Redis and OpenSearch and maybe Kafka and some other technologies. And that's all great if you have kind of the team's capabilities and the budget and you're a growing successful company. But unfortunately, a lot of startup companies, they don't necessarily have the built out team for that. They might have a more junior skewed team. They might be going through some churn or some transition and people left that were the people that set up the thing. Like all these kinds of things happen.
Yep.
And new team members join, they need to be added, right? How do you look at logs? How do you look at metrics? So those are some of the realities of the teams I've been part of. And that kind of inspired me in the last chapter of the book to write another blog post I'll mention, but to write a section on like, how can we use Postgres for more parts of work that you're doing now with other databases?
Yeah.
So there's, and then going beyond a little bit of the superficial, but actually concrete things. So, there's examples for how you can do background jobs on Redis, for example, you can move away from using Redis and do background job processing within Postgres.
Nice. Yeah.
There's examples on using full text search within Postgres. So readers build up experience with the TS vectors and TS query objects and those kinds of things and indexing those.
Yep.
And yeah, part of my, you know, mission on that is, yeah, maybe it'll convince a few people to consider staying with Postgres for longer, you know, and maybe not moving to a new technology and avoiding some pain. Or maybe it'll help people go the other way where we've got several database technologies, we're running into operational challenges. You know, what if we migrated from like this Redis-based solution to a Postgres-based solution, you know, and then they can think about what they gain in that, what they might lose, you know, or how they can test it and you know, benchmark it and be assured that they'd have similar capabilities and performance and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I think that that's a tricky chapter to write because it's a Pandora box that, you know,
like, yeah,
you want to be careful because it's a whole, yeah. I mean, like I said, it's kind of an endless amount of solutions. Kind of going back to something more general, like what's the most important lesson would you say you've learned over your career about software development? Anything come to mind?
I think the first thing that pops into my head is the the importance of kind of continual learning and, you know, kind of skill development for yourself and, you know, staying. I think it's an important value to, you know, even if it doesn't come naturally, to like lean into as a technologist, that things are going to be, you know, we sort of benefit from, you know, being knowledge workers in a lot of ways. We can make a lot of money and we can, you know, we don't have like a physically demanding job and that kind of thing. But the trade-off is, you know, we need to be kind of learning about new technologies and learning what to apply and sometimes learning when not to apply new technologies.
Yeah.
And, you know, so yeah, I'd say like in general, just the importance of investing in your skills and knowledge as a technology worker.
Are there anything, is there any developments in Postgres that you're excited about? Are you paying attention to all that?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's always the discussion about the, you know, multi-active.
Yeah.
I tend to say multi-primary. But,
yep.
You know, having more than one primary instance that could, you know, load could be distributed to with kind of a sharding mechanism. And I saw that just last week at reInvent, Amazon launched Aurora Limitless, which has kind of like a sharding mechanism. And then there's, you know, Citus as open source, their schema-based sharding mechanism. And so some of that stuff, I think, does make a lot of sense to be done as, you know, and there's a pattern for this in Postgres from what I've gleaned, that a lot of that stuff that kind of exists first as outside solutions, sometimes they make their way eventually into the core. So this probably isn't coming in anytime soon, but in the future, whether Postgres might adapt its paradigm and be kind of like a multi-primary database.
Yeah.
Maybe something a little more, something more immediate and available now is recently I kind of dove into the new Postgres 16 system view pgstat.io. And just in general, I would encourage anyone that's, you know, and myself, like the amount of like catalog views, I think is a really cool thing in Postgres to get a lot of insight into what's happening. And it's pretty raw information, but it can be a really good starting point to, you know, try to understand this kind of highly concurrent environment. Like what are the things that are happening in aggregate that, and then you can go and explore things in more detail and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, the observability story is getting better. I think that like multi-active or active-active or whatever you want to call it, multi-master, has been, it's like elusively not part of the core. You know, it's just like a little bit too much of a operational concern that it's been tough, I think, for it to get into the core. Like just my brief studying the history of that, because I agree too, that's one of my things. If I had a magic wand, I would love to be able to deploy two small Postgreses, even, you know, everything's replicating. They just both talk to each other and they're just friends and one can go down and, you know, it's just like, that would be a great, a great world, even for small deployments. I'd rather have two, you know, one CPU cluster, you know, one CPU machines rather than two CPU machine.
Yeah. There's availability and there's, you know, ad hoc reporting, and there's different use cases, and a lot of those are satisfied now with other mechanisms like you know, replication and of different types.
Yeah.
And actually I think there's some cool energy on and tooling now that's coming out with using logical replication and having you still got to roll your own a bunch of different things, but
yeah.
Having some tooling in place to help you keep kind of like at least a standby that's available that is low impact and can help with like major version upgrades and that kind of things as well, or
yeah.
Instance cutovers.
Well, I thought it was interesting that, you know, I was talking to somebody who's our CTO, you know, very experienced in Postgres, and just how any benchmark you ever see for Postgres is like no one would ever run Postgres in the configured the way it is for the benchmarks. You know, it's like it's always like an extreme optimization. It's just like a drag race, you know, but you would never tune your car like a drag racer would be, you know? And so it seems semi irrelevant to the real world, you know, but I get why they do it, because you got to compare it somehow. And, you know, how much do you degrade the performance? The answer is none, you know, as far as a test goes. But yeah, I think it's, think for the real world, it would just be great to have, like I said, just a squad of Postgres clusters just kind of working in the open source world without you having to think a lot. Like right now, it's very intentional where how you would do sharding, how you would separate that stuff. And it's just a lot of work for a developer who doesn't really know, doesn't have good context to make those decisions. It'd be great if the software just did it. So,
yeah. And it's in, you know, in my book, you'll find a whole section on sharding, since it's not something that Postgres offers natively.
Right.
There's also a whole chapter though on table partitioning, which I think is a really underused capability by most developers, because most web apps I've worked on have not a ton, but they have one or two tables that are these enormous log style tables, and sometimes they're ruining performance for other things, you know?
Yeah.
It could be the team's productivity just for deployments. You know, somebody touches the table and it's the index build takes forever. Yeah. And so I think table partitioning is a really cool capability that people can use right now and learn about.
Yeah.
And then sharding, the frameworks are actually coming in. So early on you asked about like whether Rails is doing anything. Rails now has benefited from some, you know, for the most part, from what I understand, extracted code from GitHub and Shopify on the multiple databases support. And that was a big part of what inspired me to write the book too, is I think the book attempts to go from the beginning chapters to the later chapters, more like in kind of the basics in the beginning, like administration and SQL and integrity constraints and stuff like that, to more advanced stuff at the end, like replication, sharding, and partitioning. And Ruby on Rails offers a horizontal sharding capability now that is part of the framework. And, but it does create this, challenge though, where you need to both know how it works in Active Record, and you do need to kind of know the topology of your database deployment too, you know, whether it's Postgres or something else. So it is challenging, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, kind of wrapping up, do you listen to podcasts much, or are you, is this rare to be interacting with them?
I do listen to podcasts.
What are a couple of your favorites?
I listen to Postgres FM pretty religiously, correspond with Nikolai and Michael a bit as well.
Yeah.
On the Ruby side, I listen to some, like Remote Ruby is a pretty popular one. There's a few hosts that are, you know, they have a good time. It's pretty casual conversation style. And you can learn a lot. On the Postgres side, another one, Scaling Postgres with Creston Jameson.
Yeah.
I listen to his, and he's got a lot of nice like news updates and that kind of thing. So yeah, those are a couple.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. I was just thinking earlier about Railscast back in the day. Like, keep thinking we need to have Tembo casts or Postgres casts or something, because I feel like little weekly snippets of cool demoing this stuff would be great. It was always such a such a well done effort there, but I don't know if he ever made enough money to justify it, you know.
Yeah, Ryan Bates was the creator of that, and had the chance to meet him once and thank him too, because Railscast was a big part of how I helped level up my career for sure.
Yeah.
And actually a Ruby and Rails based consultancy, they were doing a thing called PG Casts a number of years ago. I can pass on a link to that.
All right.
And it's still available and they're still good. They do focus on one small topic, but I think it's been dormant for about 10 years. So maybe you can, maybe you can re-pick that up.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, I agree with you. I have to say the Postgres FM guys, I've learned so much. I mean, it's just like a masterclass lesson. I love how they interact with each other, and you know, I love Nikolai like interrupting, and you know, Michael just like, hey, it's okay, but he can't help himself. So, yeah, great characters, great people, and and I can't believe Nikolai's trying to do his year of posts on Postgres. I think he's in the 80s now. You're probably tracking that, I'm sure, as well.
I saw that. Yeah, it's Postgres marathon tweets.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. It's intense.
Yeah. He's gonna come out of it grizzled. I'll just say that.
Yeah.
A grizzled content creator. So anyway, well, cool. Well, it was good catching up with you, Andy, and I'm sure we'll chat some more. But where can listeners find you online? Are you on Twitter?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter and X, promoting Postgres and Rails in the book a lot. And you can find me at, it's the first three letters of my first name and the first four of my last name. So it's AndAtki. And I also blog at andyatkinson.com.
Awesome. Thanks for coming.
Thanks, Ry. Yeah, happy to be here. Excited.